Mark Twain had a simple philosophy of rearing children. He said it was pretty simple until they turned 13. He said, when they turn 13, you ought to stuff them in a barrel, seal up the lid, and feed them through a knot hole. And when they turn 16, plug up the knot hole. I can tell when I read that from Mark Twain that he didn't know a whole lot about rearing children. First of all, it isn't simple until they're 13. Second, I have never been able to get any 13-year-old to get into a barrel, say nothing of sealing it up, and it's impossible to feed them through a knot hole. They can consume a refrigerator full of food when they turn 13, 16, or whatever. It isn't easy at all. In fact, I don't know of a more exacting task in life than rearing a family. Running a church is a downhill slide compared to rearing a happy, healthy, wholesome family, and to maintain a sense of respect as a father or as a mother. It's encouraging when you look back over your shoulders and realize that they're still friends and they want to be with you. In fact, we have the joy of having our kids say to us, "Where are we going to go on vacation this year?" It just dawned on me several years ago that they say that because I pick up the tab. I thought they wanted to be with us, but I realize it isn't quite that simple. We're looking at Proverbs 22:6 through new eyes and maybe through a little, hopefully, enlightenment from the text to understand that it is not saying what it has been used to traditionally teach, that if we train up a child in our way, then somehow they will learn our habits, do it in our mentality and through our experience, and then they will never return or they will never turn back from God. It's not saying that at all. The secret is not finding a Christian school to put them into, though there's nothing, certainly nothing wrong with a Christian school necessarily, or to put them in a summer camp so that they might, through the summer months, continue to learn about God, though there's nothing wrong with a summer camp. Our kids have been involved in them, and I have been involved in them for years. We have gone to Mount Hermon. This happens to be a camp on the West Coast that we have been going to for now 24, 25 years. We love the memory of what that brings, but there's nothing magical that happens at a summer camp that causes a kid to continue to walk with God. In fact, there's nothing magical within a church. I've said for years that the church cannot resurrect what the home puts to death. The church isn't in the resurrecting business. Miracles aren't happening just because a kid goes to Sunday school and gets a whole chest full of medals that he never missed a year for the last 9, 10, 11 years. But great things can occur in a church where things are balanced and realistic and understand the kids. That's what I think this passage is teaching, really. And that is, wise is the parent who trains a child according to his way or her way. We looked at that rather carefully yesterday, and we said a number of things about the verse is and is not teaching. We who are in the child-rearing work, and all of us parents are, and it seems as though we're never out of it, though our methods adapt from one year to the next, we are to make a study of our children so that we know how they are put together. And then we adapt our training accordingly, according to the individual gifts and inclinations. The word I've used is bents in the child, so that when the child reaches the age of maturity, will not return or turn away from it. I've paraphrased it this way: adapt the training of your children so that it is in keeping with their individual gifts or bents. That, by the way, is the Amplified Bible's rendering of that in brackets, so that it is in keeping with his individual gifts or bents. the God-given characteristics built into them at birth. And when maturity comes, they will not leave the training they have received. It's a wonderful promise. First of all, a child is not a soft, pliable lump of clay or a piece of dough. No two are the same, as we reminded ourselves of yesterday. Even twins aren't the same. I've ministered in a church where we had triplets. They were delightful to watch. I never could tell the difference between one and the other. Our kids knew the triplets well, and they knew them. They knew which one was which. I never did, and I always dreaded the thought of marrying the wrong one when that time came. I had to trust the parents to put the right kid in the right outfit so we'd be doing it right. But they're delightful kids, but they are three different kids, though they are identical. You couldn't pick them out and identify which one unless you were parents or real close to them. Now, the primary task, of course, is knowing our children, knowing them deeply, knowing them intimately, and understanding how they're put together. We have two boys, two girls in our family. Boys like the bookends on each end, and the girls in the middle. They are four completely different individuals. What worked with one did not work with the other. I remember when we were potty training one of our kids. I mean, all he needed was a star. You lick it and put it on a piece of paper and boom, it'll work wonders. It was amazing. We had another one. I was convinced she'd go to school in diapers. Nothing seemed to work. She wasn't motivated by extrinsic things. One, very gifted in athletics, and another, not at all, in our two boys. One of them quite artistic, and the other one, not at all. In our girls, though they look very much alike, both of them look a lot like their mother, thank goodness, are very different from their mother deep within. They have different makeups. They are not pliable pieces of clay that we could sort of shift and move around. So the greatest gift we can give our kids as we're rearing them in our home is sensitivity. Learning who they are, paying attention to the way they react and the things they like. We can be so preoccupied, can't we? Especially in our student years. And our children come along at these formative years, and here we are, you know, neck deep in our own studies. And it's easy to miss the moments, the magic of the moments. Early on, you learn that one kid is left-handed, the other one's right-handed. I'm left-handed. Two of our children are left-handed. We knew it just a few months out of the womb. They reach for things with that hand. Simple things you observe, but you have to observe it. It is remarkable what you miss when you lack that sensitivity. Now, look over in Proverbs chapter 20, verse 11. In case you wonder how you find out about your children, just look closely, 20:11. It is by his deeds that a lad distinguishes himself. I think one of the renderings says, makes himself known. It is by his deeds that a boy makes himself known if his conduct is pure and right. And look at the next verse. The hearing ear, the seeing eye, the Lord's made both of them. I think the implication is open your ears, open your eyes. I have a friend who tells a remarkable story of an obstetrician who didn't know his own wife was pregnant until she was 7 months along, and he criticized her for being fat. I mean, that's what I call thick. mean, the guy is operating in another world. You know, say, Earth to Doc, wake up. Your children will not know how to verbalize many of the things that mark their lives, and it's your task as a parent to notice them. A child makes himself known by his conduct. Listen. Look. Pay attention. They're not just financial dreams or benefits when tax time comes. They are individuals, people in the making. One of my friends in summer camp ministry, Ken Port. Kenny has a great title he gives to junior high kids up at Hume Lake. He calls them pre-people. Yeah, just kind of a joke there, you know. They're kind of nuts when they get to be in junior high. Never met anybody that wanted to be a junior higher again. Just kind of move into loco land. It's just kind of nuts. And even then, however, they're making themselves known. And though they don't know how to say it, they're crying out for boundaries and security and affection. 13, do not love sleep or you'll become poor. Open your eyes. You'll be satisfied with food. If you take them in a group of three verses, they tie in, don't they, with a child making herself or himself known. Terribly important. Now, you think, well, what if I just leave them? What if we just sort of let them grow up on their own? I'll show you from another proverb the answer to that question before we turn to a psalm. Look at Proverbs 29, verse 15. Haunting statement. And all of this, by the way, ties in with being good managers of our home. For if one is not, how can he manage the church of God? Is the question Paul asks in his list of requirements in 1 Timothy 3. That's what we're tracking. How to be good managers. A lot of it has to do with being observant, good students of our young. Look at 29:15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child, this is an unhappy rendering, a child who gets his own way. The Hebrew says simply, a child left brings shame to his mother. Is that eloquent? A child left. Left in his room? No. Left with a babysitter? No, no. Left in the condition in which he's born. A child who is left, neglected, unobserved, untrained. We've all been around them. They make a room miserable when you're around an untrained child. And this gives you the warning. It's the peril of an uncared for, unnurtured child. Shame to the mother. It's a heartache to the dad. It's a tragic situation. Well, okay. So much for the overall analysis. What about these bents? If you're like me, you're curious about what to look for. And how can we categorize them? Let's do it very simply. Let's think in two columns. On the left side of your mind, think of the good bents, and on the other side, the evil. The good we cooperate with and cultivate. The evil we have to counteract and must be done mainly through the power of Jesus Christ. Conversion of the child as well as the Lord's working in their lives. We'll get to that in a moment, but first, the good. Look at Psalm 139. Psalm 139. 39. What a great psalm. It's a psalm of incredible theology. It's a great psalm in which to teach theology. It's a psalm of 24 verses, and if you think of it as a hymn, the hymn has four stanzas, six verses in each stanza. And in the first stanza, God is seen as knowing all. It's a great presentation of the omniscience of God. Oh, Lord, it's a prayer. Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You understand my thought from afar. The thought is, you understand my thoughts before I even think them. Long or far before the thoughts come to me, you already know them. He knows it all. I love the rendering of verse 3 in the New American Standard. You scrutinize my path and my lying down, and you are intimately acquainted with all of my ways. We're back to that word way. You understand my bents, how I'm put together, the paths of my life, the things that drive me and motivate me and frighten me, the things that make me who I am. You understand it all. This is the omniscience of God. He says in verse 6 with an exclamation, such knowledge is too wonderful. I can't take it in. It's too wonderful for me. I can't attain it. Can't grasp it. You say that at times as you go through seminary and you come across some of these great truths and you just say, I can't take that in. It's too much. It's too deep. How unfathomable are his ways, Romans 11:33 tells us. Now, when you get down to verse 13, I'll jump there because of time. Suddenly, we are where the camera has never been. There is a fiber optic camera exploring the womb, a guided tour of the fetus. And in 13 through 17, we have some of the most profound truths regarding the unborn child. And when you look at it in the eyes of the original, it is remarkable what you find about the fetus. Allow me to dissect a little, if I may. You is in emphatic position in the original. You and none other. You, God, not Mother Nature, not chance, not fate, not the joining of an egg with a sperm, is not a biological result, but you, oh God, the one he begins the prayer in addressing. Oh Lord, you know me. You knew me before I was born. You and no other is the emphasis. Formed my inward parts. The word means to originate, to create. You and no other created my origin. He doesn't stop there. In fact, that's just the introduction. It's the gate that opens the scene as we look at ourselves in our mother's womb. You formed my inward parts. Literally, it means kidneys. And it's a colloquialism for the vital organs, the brain, the lungs, the liver, the kidneys, the heart. You formed, you originated them. In fact, look at how he puts it. When you wove me in my mother's womb. To weave, sanak, means to knit together like an interwoven mass, a thicket. Or even better, like fine needlepoint. Same term used of the tabernacle's veil that hung. This fabulous piece of tapestry woven by the hands of the Hebrew women. You were interweaving me as I was being formed from embryo to fetus until birth. You were working on my frame. fact, he explodes with praise again in verse 14. I will give thanks to you. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, meaning the works of the embryo and the fetus. Verse 15, my frame. Look at that word. Bony substance, skeleton is what it means. God declares that it is he who had a hand in the internal structure of your facial features, of your height, your frame, the bones of your being. You know, let me interrupt here and say, your child needs to know these things. I mean, if you've got a 12-year-old who is 6'4", it's a girl, she's going to be encouraged to know that she's not a freak of nature. We have family that I've known for years, the Dave Lynn family, that the dad's about 6'5", mother's about 6'1", 6'2", and they have giants in their family. They're all tall, 6'10", 6'8". They have a daughter now, just out of junior high school, getting into senior high school. She is, I recall, is like 6'5". I mean, there's universities writing them from all over the country. Dave Lynn's got it made for the education of his kids. But the girls, they don't think about playing volleyball or basketball so much as dating. I mean, how many 6'5 boys are there who are 12 or 13 years old? This girl needs encouragement to know that her bony substance, her structure, her frame was put together by God. Years ago, when we drove General Motors cars, you'd always see a little sign as you opened the door. It said, "Body by Fisher." We have one up on that. We have a body by God. He has put us together. If you're unhappy with your face, hey, take it to God. He made it. He put it, and it's like no other face. In fact, as he's interweaving all of these things, remember, it's not just bony structure he's put together. It says, skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. When I was made in secret and skillfully wrought, beautiful in Hebrew, variegated, it would be a good term, like multicolored tapestry. God, the overseer, designed all of me. The depths of the earth, Hebrews believe that to be the sacred place. To them, the womb was among the most sacred of places. That's why abortion was never an option. This is life. And God working in 9 months on putting together the veins and arteries and the multicolored anatomy and that which a surgeon's scalpel can never touch, a personality. And he puts it all together. Isn't that fabulous? And among those interweavings of God's handiwork are gifts and abilities. And you are all the product of his working. We all are. Isn't that a great thought? That makes each one of us uniquely made. And that takes away all need to be envious. You're in envy, you're saying, I'm not pleased with what God has made. Oh, my. There's no other you. You try to be someone else, you leave a hole where you were to fill. When I try to be someone I am not, then I... Not only am I denying God's handiwork in my life and resisting and rejecting it, I am departing or leaving the presence that I am to represent on this earth, and the same for you. Now, back to children. Each child, uniquely made. What a great thought. Not the result of a passionate moment of intimacy. Not that. But a divinely, sovereignly chosen individual placed in the womb to grow and develop, to be born, to discover, and to be. I just I think that's part of the challenge of being adoptive parents. You don't have the benefit of knowing the mom and dad that well. So there's a lot of guesswork. When you have your own kids, you see yourself in them so often. How often we parents have said, he just like me. The kid's growing up just like me. And sometimes it makes you sigh, and sometimes it makes you smile. But he puts it all together in this wonderful way. And the job of the parent is not only to see, but to encourage it. With left-handers, we keep the pencil in their hand. We help them draw with their left hand. With those well-coordinated, we work with them with a ball and with a net and with the games and the rules, and we cultivate that. We, with those who have other gifts, we cultivate those as parents. It's a job. But the child grows up not frustrated, trying to be someone he's not, but happy being who he is. And we put that artwork on the refrigerator. Oh, that is great. Now, it may not be that great when they're three, but to them, it's a real accomplishment, and you make something of it. Went over to one of our kids' house the other day, and the refrigerator could hardly get in to get a bottle of milk because we had art all over the refrigerator because one of the children is really gifted in that area. And I said to our daughter, good for you. That's exactly what needs to be done. She shrugged and said, that's what you did for me. I'm just doing what you did. And I, in a moment, had a little relief. I was grateful that she did remember something good that came from those very busy years of her childhood. Now, the tragedy comes when we make them who they're not. I mean, can you imagine Nielsen and Young being defensive ends for the Chicago Bears? I mean, just think about it. These artists trying to play football. Or, you know, offensive guard Nate Newton in ballet. It doesn't work. He's not made for ballet. Now, what if his mother really wanted a ballet kid, you know, and sent him to dance and just kept on? I mean, she finally, just out of weight alone, would have to give up her dreams. But how slowly we are to get it. A kid distinguishes himself or herself. And these wonderful gifts, as you cultivate them, it is remarkable what occurs. I put it all together in a little paraphrase. See if this makes sense. For you, God, and none other originated my vital organs, such as my kidneys. You knitted me together in the womb of my mother. My skeleton and bones and facial expressions were not hidden from you when I was made in that concealed place of protection. When my veins and arteries were skillfully embroidered together in variegated colors like fine needlepoint. Your eyes watched over me when I was just an embryo. A fetus. In your book, the days I should experience were all described and recorded. The kind of days that would shape me into the person you want me to be, even before I had been born. How priceless and mighty and vast and numerous are your thoughts of me, O God. That's the good news. And that's what makes your chest stick out with pride when your kid grows up happy and secure and achieving and, most importantly, healthy and loving God. Realistically, loving his siblings, knowing his place in life. There's bad news also. We're in the Psalms, and I close with just a quick glance. We'll come back to it next time. Psalm 51:5. See, you got to counteract this other side. Psalm 51. Behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin my mother conceived me. Doesn't mean the act of conception was sinful when my mother conceived me. It means I possessed the sinful nature of my mother. It got passed on. Depravity of mankind is undeniable. universal disease that has impacted all of humanity. The Amplified Bible says, "Behold, I was brought forth in a state of iniquity. My mother was sinful who conceived me, and I too am sinful." If that isn't enough, look at Psalm 58, verse 2. It gets ugly. 58:2, "No, in heart you work unrighteousness. On earth you weigh out the violence of your hands. The wicked are estranged from the womb." Look at that. From the womb. "These who speak lies go astray from birth. They have venom like the venom of a serpent, like a deaf cobra that stops up its ears, so that it will not hear the voice of charmers or skillful caster of spells." Why, is that vivid or what? Our child has a viper-like nature. Every one of them does. Interesting, you never have to teach them to do wrong. You never have to plant weeds in the garden. They just, I don't know where they come from. They just are there. You have to work for the blossoms. But you got to counteract the weeds. So with us. And I want to tell you, as ministers in the making, the greatest gift you can give your church, along with a life of integrity and character, purity, is the gift of a well-managed family. Kids under control. Remember, they got to hang around deacons' kids. So that's going to be a challenge. And elders' kids, that's tough. Furthermore, they got to live with the tact that they're you know, preacher's kids. That brings a pressure that you and I, unless we were PKs, I was not, but you may have been, that only PKs understand. Because inside their lives is this evil nature working away at them. And I hold these precious little babies in my hand. Now, some of them are not really attractive. Let me just kind of make that clear too, right? I learned as a pastor to be diplomatic. Johnny Carson had a great answer. Every time he held a new baby, he said, "Isn't that a baby?" Which I think is a wonderful way to solve the problem. It can be ugly as if it's wrong side out, but the mother thinks it's just beautiful. And you say, "Isn't that a baby?" And that's fine. That'll work. You can do that. Inside every little precious life, every little beautiful child, or one that isn't so physically beautiful, inside every one of them is a nature that's like a snake. My kids would say, when we would set boundaries, "Don't you trust me?" I'd say, "You, I trust. Your nature, I don't." Don't trust your nature. I know that any one of you could wind up in the back seat of a car. I know that any one of you could either get pregnant or get someone pregnant. It's your nature that concerns me. We I tell you, we'd work on that. We'd counteract that. We'd deal with that like overtime. Supper time was like training table. We tried to make it fun, but sometimes it wasn't fun. Sometimes just gut-level hard work. Minnesota Crime Commission released a report a number of years ago. It said, "Every baby starts life as a little savage. He's completely selfish and self-centered. He wants what he wants when he wants it. His bottle, his mother's attention, his playmate's toy, his uncle's watch. Deny these and he seethes with rage and aggressiveness, which would be murderous were he not so helpless." That means that all children, not just certain children, are born delinquent. If permitted to continue in the self-centered world of infancy, given free rein to his impulsive actions, every child would grow up a criminal, a thief, a killer, or a rapist. Every child. Just because you and I are engaged in ministry, which we love dearly, and the work is so rewarding, so fulfilling, so significant, does not give us the right, on the contrary, it does not give us the right to let our children raise themselves. They need time, attention, training, sensitivity. Give it to them. You don't have a lot? Give them what you got. And when a little free time comes, rather than thinking of the golf game or some other involvement that is consuming and selfish, think of rolling up your sleeves and doing the hard work of observing, encouraging, and affirming, counteracting, disciplining. Tomorrow we'll talk about disciplining. Thank you, Father, for the things we learn from this ancient book. Thank you for your grace in forgiving us where we have failed, for your mercy in ministering to us in our need. Encourage us, though we ourselves may not have received such attention and time, with the fact that it is our opportunity to do that with this next generation. May we see your divine handiwork in the faces and the lives, the shaping of our children. And may we cooperate with what you have begun, Lord. And may your spirit counteract that which is evil and despicable and frighteningly dangerous, even in our own children. We pray for Jesus' sake.